We won't know until it happens if there is a war the real value or utility of that information until it's used in nefarious ways.
Mondays with Mike.
Mondays with Mike. Mondays with Mike.
Next topic was TikTok. They finally found a buyer, and the deal has been made. I bet if you do a Google Ngram search, the word deal will increase a lot, 2024 and on. But it's actually what they were doing, so I guess it applies. So a new deal for TikTok. There was an internal memo at TikTok that NBC got a hold of that there's going to be three new owners, and they're not full owners. They're 15% owners each. Oracle, Silver Lake, I believe, was the name of the second, and MGX, and then ByteDance, the company with previous ownership, with ties to China, they're going to retain 20% ownership. Another 30% or so is in the hands of existing investors, quote-unquote. A trustworthy partner will exist. The deal should be closed in January. Initially, a year ago, there was a ban of TikTok set to go into effect. Trump said shortly before taking office, I'm not going to enforce that. And then Biden said, if you're not going to enforce it, then the one day in office that remained for my term before it went into effect, if you're not going to enforce it, then I'm not going to enforce it either. But then TikTok went offline anyway and then came back online thanking Trump. So there's this idea that having certain people on your board of directors can, like, strengthen corporate ownership. Like, Henry Kissinger was on the board of directors of Theranos. It gave that company, it and a lot of other celebrity board members, gave that company a lot of weight to throw around that they wouldn't have already had. I'm starting to think that listed in the stock profile of a company might be, have they thanked Trump recently? Or something. Because it does, that's just what I think might happen. But anyway, now they've actually found buyers for it. They didn't have buyers for it before. Does this moot the national security concerns that ByteDance used to be in charge of it and they're not going to be a majority owner anymore? Does it moot national security concerns? That would be my first question.
I don't think so. So I think the reason why Congress even passed that law was not necessarily the ownership, but the information that's being gathered and the fact that they have the information and what it's being used for. The question I would have is, does ByteDance still participate in the company? Does it have any power at all? Does it have anyone on the board? Does it have access? As long as it's all about if they have governing control of the company, it's whether they have the level in the hierarchy of having control to or access to any of the information in the like an aggregate or any kind of ability to see that information. The only reason is because it's unclear what the ties are. That was the whole suspicion from the get-go of even having it have so much sway and power over the United States social media landscape. So that would be my concern there.
Yeah.
But the other thing would be things like propaganda, misinformation.
Okay.
How willing the company is to stop the spread of misinformation. Censorship, actually, is the other concern. So censoring certain topics, concepts, or ideas.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. The propaganda angle definitely makes sense to me. I think that people, let's just put it this way. People believe certain false things. Why do they believe false things? Because they've heard it over and over. Or because they've come to a wrong conclusion and they haven't had the opportunity to clarify it. Or because it's established wisdom. So just people believe a lot of things. Some of it's true. Some of it will be false. So given that some of it will be false, given that people will believe certain false things, people are vulnerable to lies. And if they're vulnerable to lies, then we gotta watch out and make sure that nefarious agents don't propagandize people, or that it's effectively counteracted if they're going to. So I definitely buy the propaganda perspective. I've heard a lot about, oh, China's gonna get your data. But I think to myself, what would China do with my data? Not that I'm not concerned, I just find it a bit nebulous. What is the actual harm here of if they know my location, or if whatever, if somebody's going to steal from me, then yes, then that's a problem. But why would a country do that? Countries around the world don't wish me ill. I don't think so anyway. Or even if they do, they got bigger fish to fry. So I'm just a little bit... Can you explain to me, if you know, what the data angle of this is, really?
Sure, I'll give you a handful of examples. So we won't know until it happens. If there is a war this century between the U.S., China, Russia, we won't know the real value or utility of that information until it's used in nefarious ways. For example, a way a government has used information in a way that was lethal, because it had the information on those people, is when Israel gave all those pagers to Hezbollah, and then all the pagers blew up in the pockets of the individuals who participated in that organization within Lebanon. Same kind of principle here. If China knows who the U.S. users are or has implemented some kind of backdoor within the TikTok app, we won't know until it's triggered. And it could be used for any number of things. It could be used to remotely shut down all the computers. It could be used to inject viruses and erase people's life savings. It could be used... There's any number of things that could happen. The other thing I was thinking about is that usually medical data is kept private. So if somebody's allergic to something, maybe their search history or what they watch could reveal that. If an opponent in a war has that kind of information and they want to inflict maximum harm on a country or confusion, or to hurt morale, for instance, they could tailor responses to each individual person the more that they know, right? So if somebody's allergic to peanuts or peanut butter, they send them a peanut butter sandwich or something that's disguised as something else. It's just about a question of imagination, creativity, all that. And the thing about China is they play the long game, right? So they're a country with a 1,000-year plan for success. And part of that plan may just be the accumulation of information that's compromising on people, if and when they need it. We won't know until it happens. I'm sure, look, part of the thing is about trust building. So for the reason I mentioned the Israel example is that in order for them to use those pagers, they had to trust that the product was actually a reliable product, that it did what was on the tin, that it actually communicated information, that it was a fully functioning pager, but those pagers were also something else. And so the question for TikTok could be, are they generating or inculcating a degree of trust in the product such that people rely on it for whatever it is they're relying on it for? And then they yank the rug suddenly. So part of the concern when TikTok was shut down in the US is that people were making money from TikTok, right? That they derive an income from it. And one way you can win in a war is you make the people so miserable that they revolt, right? That's part of it, is that remember when we talked about how people play games on TikTok or they spend money on TikTok? When a country has access to that kind of information, financial information, if they have savvy internet people, they can then use that information for nefarious reasons. And we live in a highly interconnected age. People give way more information out than they otherwise would have in years past. In World War II and World War I, there was no internet, so there was no huge amounts of information. But when you're talking about clandestine stuff, when people sneak in and sabotage stuff in a country, that kind of information becomes really important for the small moments that turn the tide in a bigger conflict. Actually, I'm thinking of a movie called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, where it was a special operation by the UK to pretty much shut down all the carbon filters for submarines, for U-boats.
In World War II.
And what they did is they snuck into a colony in Africa that was a Spanish colony, and they stole the boat, right, that had all the U-boat filters for all the U-boats in the Atlantic, which cleared the way for the U.S. to invade Normandy, right? When the U.S. entered the war and moved all their stuff from the U.S. over to Europe, there were less U-boat attacks because the U-boats didn't have all the things they needed. So same kind of deal here. They don't need all the information. They just need to figure out in whatever manner they can. And look, part of it is also, and I know this may seem a little odd, is the pictures that people provide and the videos that people provide on TikTok show locations. So if you look at the history, I was listening to Rachel Maddow actually talk on a podcast about how Hawaii and Pearl Harbor got attacked. And it was a German family that was living in Hawaii, were taking pictures of their kids. And it just so happened that there were ships in the background of all these pictures. And Japan was able to piece together the location of all the major ships for its bombing runs. It's something like that, right? Where something seems innocuous, right? Something seems benign, but the national security implications aren't known until they're realized. And that's the big concern with something like this. If they have access to all this data and all this information, and if they have access to these archives, because they could comb through it with AI or with just human, they got over a billion people, just eyeballs, and just sit there and comb through whatever they need, any location, any information. And what's crazy is this information is just publicly given, right? It's just tourists at a beach, or it's people having fun at a park, or just walking down a city. But the information they're providing in the background is super useful for intelligence gathering reasons. That's the concern.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. If we're preparing for a worst case scenario, and perhaps not necessarily a likely scenario, but one of the scenarios where you must prepare for it ahead of time, because if it happens to you, it's already too late. I guess I buy that. So thanks for explaining that. So now listen to our sponsor, Incogni. Just kidding, we don't have sponsors.
In the newspaper, there was an article about South Korea, that there were scammers who were using people's videos. They were using the apps on their computers and the permission to use the microphone and the camera to get compromising information on them so they could blackmail them.
Yeah.
The sextortion thing where they have compromising videos of people in flagrante or in intimate moments where they don't expect anybody to be videotaping them. And so that's another thing that could exist. It's called compromise, right? Where they can use blackmail. They could use it. It's because it provides a window into people's lives that they otherwise might not be able to access. That's what I'm saying, is that's the concern.
Yeah, I'm always very averse to grant this app access to your microphone or your camera. No, thank you. No, thank you. Not Instagram, not any of it. I try to turn it off once I'm done with it. But not everybody is, it's not even paranoia. It's just like wanting to sanitize the digital experience. But anyway, TikTok, I don't know. I'll tell you the truth. It might be a little bit draconian of me. So it's the devil you know and the devil you don't. But when I thought TikTok was going to be nixed, I thought to myself, that's nice. People will have a great chance at a new start. They'll have an opportunity to consider critically what they do on their phones. Because, and this is something that is documented, it was, the book is Stolen Focus. In Stolen Focus, Joaquin, talks about how people at the companies, I think he was talking about Facebook, were very aware, or at least became aware, still in the implementation phase, that they were creating a very addictive product that was going to consume a lot of the time of the users of it. Definitely some of the people that he interviewed had profound regrets because they thought about how much human potential just out there everywhere would end up being wasted as a result of their invention. So I wasn't thinking of that precisely, but it was essentially that running in the back of my head. It's okay, at least people will now have a choice because they'll be broken out of their current habits. So they'll have a choice of what habits to found, new habits to replace it. Is it going to be good habits? You can hope, but you don't have it's not like a likely hope. But at least people have the choice, I thought. And then it didn't happen anyway. Or it was like a weekend without it. I was thinking about this when I was writing the show notes, and it came to me in this way. And I said, is this country, ever going to be great, while so many of its people waste their days watching short-form videos and frying their brains. Frying their brains is a little bit of an overstatement, but it's not really that much. It really does change, like, the dopaminergic pathways. So, what do you think of that, and am I barking up the wrong tree here?
No, there's something there. There was an article in the Seattle Times talking about how schools are moving away from having people read full books, that they're reading excerpts of books, right? That's wild that you're not reading the full text, because the whole point of a story and plotting and progression and characters and all that is that you read it from a beginning, a middle, and an end. If you're only reading bits and pieces, only windows into the story, you're not seeing the full scope of it. Could you imagine To Kill a Mockingbird, but only one scene? Or Huckleberry Finn, and they're only painting the fence or something. Imagine that was the full story, that you miss all the context. Or imagine 1984, but the only thing that you're reading about is him reading the newspaper or something, or him waking up to like a 2 minutes of hate. And you're like, that's the full story. No, there's more. The whole point there is that you miss the fullness of the argument. And what I found really odd is that it's happening in universities too, because last I checked, when I went to university, we had to read the full text. We had to read a lot of stuff. We had to attend lectures and listen intently. The whole point of it was that you were held to a bit of a higher standard, given that it was a university, that you're supposed to demonstrate that you actually learned the information. Even more than in high school, because in high school there's a bit of a culture of just slightly inflating grades to make sure no one fails. College, not so much. I found that there's actually pretty strict standard. Maybe it's just the one I went to, but there are pretty strict standards of actually demonstrating an ability to recall information and present a cogent argument using the information that you learn.
That's what I found as well.
Yeah, it's a real disservice actually if universities are, in order to adhere to whatever these cultural transitions are, moving away from, I don't know, 1,000 years of academic precedent, whatever, however long universities have been around, probably not 1,000 years, but a long time, that there are certain standards that you want to hold students to ensure that they're actually learning, that they're actually becoming competent professionals or whatever. Because the worry I have is, say we become too reliant on technology, and then we lose the knowledge for like basic things, mechanics, carpentry, like math. Yeah. The problem with the technologies is that it can fail, and it can fail badly. That's why you always want somebody to know how to do something independent of access to technology, like on a ship, for example. You want somebody that they train people to operate in extreme conditions. One of the trainings that they do, I'm sure that they do some version of it, is if all the system, like if half the electric goes out, and you're barely operating. So I'm thinking actually of there was a movie with Harrison Ford about a Russian nuclear submarine that it goes, the nuclear reactor on the sub overloads or overheats or whatever, and it's pretty much going to go kaboom.
Are you thinking of The Hunt for Red October?
No, it's a different one. It was directed by the woman who did The Hurt Locker, the K-19, The Widowmaker. The story, it's a true story, is about this Russian submarine where their reactor pretty much went crazy, right? That some indicator was broken on it and it overheated, and they pretty much had to scuttle the sub. But this was at the height of the Cold War. They were in international waters. There was a concern that it would look like a nuclear explosion because it was a nuclear reactor on the sub. And so they went to extreme lengths to save the submarine from completely imploding and going kaboom. But one of the things that they did was that they trained under extreme conditions, as if the submarine was on fire, as if all the electrical was gone, as if they had to operate under extreme conditions. And what you lose if you give up on the totality of a textbook or a book or information is all the stuff that you might need when you need it. If the internet goes down, you want to have someone who actually knows how to run things, and not in some abstract way. You want someone who can competently just turn to the information in their brain and do the job that they need. If we become, as a species, overly reliant on these technologies that can fail, then it's a real disservice to the future generations that may one day need like actual competent people to do things in crisis. That's just a thought I have.
Indeed, I agree. I saw a video this week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, about how textiles people, they're reliant on machines to make clothes now, and a few people still know the old ways of making them. But what if that knowledge isn't preserved? It's like a dying language, and there's a peril to it all. I think that you have hit upon something that might be the solution to all of this, because realistically, there's not going to be some kind of regime like in China where they can only play 3 hours of video games a week or something like that. There's not going to be a regime like that in the West, nor probably should there be. Maybe if we're in a war or something, then it would be okay for a little bit, but in general, you're not going to have that. And people would resent such a thing. And they would be right to resent it. But what's the solution? I think the solution is just a resumption of academic excellence. And a resumption of, you need to know this, and you need to know it backward and forward, and that is what your degree means. It doesn't mean you can look it up. It doesn't mean you read part of the textbook. It means you're able to do this. So I think that academic excellence, knowing it backward and forward, and I think that some universities, any university, but a university would probably have success if they tried to do that. Because there, I would guarantee it, are a lot of young people who would yearn for such a thing, and who would love such a thing, if it was presented to them as an opportunity. So I think you've figured out a way out of this maze that we do have. Let people do what they're going to do, but then hold up the higher standard of behavior, and people will want to cede to it. And the way out of this was academic excellence.
Yeah, no, I agree that there has to be, we can't diminish the standards for academic excellence ever, really. If anything, they need to increase, because ultimately, at the end of the day, as technology becomes more complicated, more advanced, as we become more reliant, we don't want to become like WALL-E, people languishing on chairs in a giant sophisticated ship, and then when something goes haywire or crisis occurs, they just flail around, like lamenting the fact that they can't do anything. We can't, as a species, get to that point, because that's not a good idea, right? If the mm-hmm. lessons of history are anything, systems fail. Almost anything can fail. You may not have noticed, I've noticed, there's no giant dirigibles flying around all the time of blimps and giant hydrogen-powered balloons that people are flying around in. There's a few, but there's nowhere near the amount that there used to be. I wonder why.
I wasn't aware of that word, dirigible.
Yeah, dirigible. It's airship. That, sure, we have planes now, right? Which are safer, ostensibly, than giant balloons that go kaboom. But the point is that if we don't understand how things work to the degree that we need to, when things go awry, there's a real problem. There's a real struggle we'll face. That's just my thoughts on that. But yeah, we've gone on an odd tangent from TikTok, but no, I understand why.
Yeah. I'd love to see blimps flying around. I think hydrogen blimps, I think you just needed a little more innovation there and you could have figured it out. The Zeppelin was pretty horrific, but come on, it's been 90 years.
The Hindenburg is 1937.
The Hindenburg.
With that dramatic picture of a giant catching fire and plummeting to the earth.
Yeah, but the real inhumanity is never doing a blimp again. Okay, so the deal is that short-form videos change the circuitry of the brain. We know that much. Now, I have heard it said, I couldn't tell you, I don't have a source on this, but that in China, on TikTok, or whatever the equivalency is, they have a more educationally focused algorithm. Should government take an interest in the algorithm? And on one hand, I can see that this might be a free speech issue, but I wonder if it would be, really, because it's not like nothing is, nothing, it wouldn't, stuff wouldn't be off limits, it would just be what you see next. So, would it be a free speech issue? I don't know, really.
I mean, it already does that through public education. Remember we talked about for history classes how the books were just a little too gentle and kind to the history of conquest and colonialism and a bunch of other stuff, where the way that they described history was it was painted with a very rosy brush sometimes. Same kind of deal here, that look, when we actually, this made me think of that national security topic. One way you can defeat a country is just by making them dumber. TikTok was designed as a mechanism to just make people distracted and less informed about anything. Then it's a long-term plan to overcome a country by having them elect morons to run them. Idiocracy. Dumb people to go at the wheel so that the country plummets and fails and China can rise ascendant as a very successful economic superpower. That's one way you can succeed. It's just make everybody dumb. They can't do math. They can't have critical reasoning, can't make connections between things that are happening, can't look at information and decide critically if the information is valid or sound in terms of the evidence that's presented or the claims and the arguments that are made. That's one way a country can succeed at destroying another country. Just make everyone dumb.
Yeah. A country or corporations or whatever, yeah. There was a comedian, and he said that a lot of people say, I would die for my country. And they would, the comedian says. They're not being facetious, they would. But if you would die for your country, would you do your homework for your country? So that's a lot less of a sacrifice. But how many people do? Not enough. Not enough in this day and age, I would venture to say. But I was speaking about, yeah, we have had a revision of the formerly cavalier approach to presenting history to rosy a picture.
People operate on incentives, kids too. If you want to increase educational attainment in the country, create a universal access to basic income or scholarship if they meet certain academic thresholds. Say, look, if you get a B, we'll put $10 in a bond or savings account or something that will accrue, and when you graduate, you'll get paid out. Kids do respond to being motivated, and that if they have goals that they can achieve, if you turn education into a kind of game, I'm sure there would be plenty of people who would be much more inclined to make more of an effort. Because part of the issue is that education is mandatory in the U.S. for everyone. But they are not necessarily connected with why it's meant. It was like why everybody needs to be educated to a certain degree. And the assumption used to be that a high school education would be sufficient to acquire gainful employment, that you could go work in a factory or you could demonstrate you could read and write and do math and that someone would hire you. But we know that's no longer really the case for a lot of jobs, that you need like at least an associate's or a bachelor's degree just to get in the door. Right? That it's a gatekeeping mechanism for access to a living wage. If you want to have more than a meager existence, you have to have a college degree in the United States right now.
Yeah. You need more skills, and the degrees, the indicators of skills, unfortunately, mean less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing, is that everybody's in constant competition with each other, and there's no real through line of actually achieving the outcome. There's no guarantee. Mm-hmm. Other countries do this better. So Germany is the best example I can think of, where what they do is they actually give people paths they can choose from high school into college.
Yeah.
Essentially, they say, if you want to be an engineer or you want to be a mechanic or you want to work in a factory or do a certain job, we will quite literally pay you from the time you sign up to it to the time you get that job. It works that they've got a lot of skilled people who go through this system where the U.S. could learn a thing or two from how Germany does it. The U.S. does, in fact, have a system in place, but it's only for the military, the ROTC. 100%, the ROTC is a guarantee of a job if you meet the requirements and fulfill the terms. It's not only a guarantee of a job, it's a scholarship, a full ride scholarship to a university. So that is probably, the U.S. knows how to do it because they do it for the military, the Reserve Officer Training Corps. So if they can do it for the military, they can do it for anything. Anything at all.
You mentioned gamification and how you can gamify things in apps. And we could apply that to the schools as well. Like there could be, for example, like this comprehensive exam you take when you're 15, 16, 17, whatever. And depending on your score, you get that much deposited, like up to $500 in your Trump account or whatever it is, because it doesn't have to be a Trump account, tax-free.
So we actually have something tax-free. Like that, the PSAT, the national, have you ever heard of the National Merit Scholarship?
Yes.
But that, we do actually have something like that. The PSAT does provide money to people with the National Merit Scholarship for those who are the very tippy top of the higher or of the outcomes in that test. It's a real thing. So know how to do it.
Great. The last part of this, which is I was talking about the algorithm. YouTube's got an algorithm. TikTok's got an algorithm. Facebook's got an algorithm. Are these a matter of national interests? And if so, can or should they be to some degree regulated, or is that a free speech issue and we shouldn't go there?
They're a private business, right? So their algorithms just figuring out a way to make them more money compared to the alternatives. Obviously, Congress thought it was an issue because the algorithm was pointing people towards misinformation, towards propaganda, and towards clearly false information during elections. So yeah, we should be concerned about algorithms that are being designed to turn people towards scary stuff. Like, I know that Facebook and Twitter, the thing formerly known as Twitter, that they're supposed to not have people see things like hate speech, racist speech, certain types of content. But for whatever reason, sometimes the algorithms failed in that regard of censoring that out, and people would see it. And clearly, there's more work to do if they're aware of the issue, if they're aware that there is, in fact, a problem. There is no hands-free approach to this. There's certain types of information that shouldn't be in the hands of the public, period. And it's not a free speech thing. This information shouldn't be accessible to anyone kind of thing. Dangerous stuff.
Like how to make an A-bomb.
I'm not going to go through the list, but I'm reminded of the story of the university student who pretty much figured out the steps to do that, and he got a little call from the government. You can't release this information. We're going to bury it, pretty much. Like, no. That's the point, that they have to do an actual effort to regulate and censor certain types of information, period. It's not a free speech thing. There's certain stuff that just shouldn't be in the hands of the public.
All right.
One little soundbite here, and then we can move on if you like. The Labyrinthian Monstrosity, formerly known as Twitter. Artist formerly known as X. X the variable, not the social media site. Mondays with Mike.